Yeah, I mean, my slider's been a huge pitch for me, you know, especially when guys are laying off the split. And so a lot of righties in the last two lineups I've faced, so, you know, a little bit more sliders than normal. And, you know, got some big outs on them. And, you know, that's a pitch that has gotten better as the season has gone on. And so, honestly, right now I feel confident throwing it to anybody, you know, in any situation. Certain guys I know I need to be a little bit more fine when I throw it, but I'm super confident in that pitch right now.
Yeah, I would say he's especially confident throwing it against the Boston Red Sox based on what we've seen so far. It is Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast, be it iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get it. The Toronto Blue Jays, 7-2 winners over the Boston Red Sox last night, the first of three games. The second game in that series goes tonight. Kevin Gausman, the story of this game, clearly, as he has been all season against the Boston Red Sox. Kevin, his ERA is 0.43. He's faced 77 Red Sox batters. What was the stat that the Jays dropped on us last night? 77 Red Sox batters this year. He's given up like one double.
27 punchies.
Two walks. And that one of those runs, that earned run, came in a game that he was already sitting on the bench. So bullpen, well, it was charged against him, but it was a game where he wasn't even on the mound. So we know now, Kevin, that the first game of that playoff series against Boston, we know that Kevin Gausman is going to, because that's what we're talking
He's
about.
He's a good option.
The East is over. He's a good option to start that first game. What I wanted to talk to you about, the last time we saw him at the Rogers Center was that 10-2 loss to the Baltimore Orioles, 2 1/3 innings, 7 hits, 7 runs, 5 earned. And after that, he talked about a quote-unquote lack of energy. For whatever reason, there was a lack of energy out there. Well, fast forward, 2 starts. He's using a bigger glove. He apparently has, I don't know if I'd say he's convinced the coaching staff or there was some sort of a come to Jesus moment when it relates to the shift. The Jays haven't shifted as much in his last 2 starts. And of course, yesterday he was talking about a splitter, 57 four seamers, 31 splitters, sorry, his slider, 19 sliders, 3 changeups. I mean, he got strikeouts on the slider. He got strikeouts, the four seamer, got strikeouts on the splitter. He made a really good lineup look awfully uncomfortable. I think J.D. Martinez is probably still trying to work the pain out of his hand.
I think he said in his last start he's a little under the weather. That's why he came out and said that he was not feeling like he was himself, and that's why he was struggling to get through, you know, 4 or 5 innings against the Orioles. Look, the big glove thing, I laugh. Every time I hear him say that, I laugh because I was a player once. And I would try and do anything. Like when something was not working and didn't have an answer for it. And if somebody walked up to me and said, hey, why don't you use this bigger glove? It would make it easier for you to hide your pitches. And it makes a certain amount of sense.
But if it makes
you happier,
absolutely.
Do it.
You can talk a guy into anything. And now, again, they may have seen something that we can't see and they would never tell us.
Right.
Which they shouldn't. They shouldn't tell us what's going on because they don't want to let other teams notice certain things too. It's, again, he's been on our show before, and he mentioned the slider. The slider's a big pitch for him now because in the American League East, when these teams start to see you and they know you're a North and South guy, you like to throw
and
the elevated heater.
This is the third
heater.
Time, by the way, he's faced the Red Sox.
You like to throw the elevated heater. You like to throw the split finger down. For me, when they're starting to take the split finger, that sort of started with Seattle. You know, you see it down, you let it go. You see it up, you let it fly, those kind of things. I think, for me anyway, it was more of that than it was him tipping his pitches. But, again, if that's how he's feeling, that makes him have more confidence, which you could tell yesterday. It takes guts. I got to be honest with you. When you're watching him chuck balls from the umpire, when the umpire gives him a ball and he just grabs it, looks at it, and chucks it away.
Five balls. That was hilarious.
It takes a little nerve to do that against the Boston Red Sox. I know you're at home and you need that certain ball, but it takes a little guts. And when I was listening to you talk about the shift, and I was thinking, hey, you could walk in a room and go, hey, they paid me $100 million. Don't shift as much. It's real simple. Like, occasionally you got to go, I don't like it when the guy, especially against a right-handed hitter, and I got 2 strikes, don't move a guy behind second base. Keep him more straight up. You do that, I give up a hit, that's my fault. You got a little bit bigger voice when you make as much money as he does. I'm assuming that's probably the way the conversation went because it is 2022, and the khakis run a lot of things. And it's very hard to sell certain things to you, and you got to have some clout. So I'm sure that has that had something to do with it too. For me yesterday, the big difference is fastball command. When he can go arm side, his arm side, mm-hmm. and his glove side, and can do location of that to both sides of the plate, that gives that hitter now having to cover the entire plate. He can't eliminate one half. Is when a pitcher does that. You talk about pitchers always talking about fastball command. Why they say that is because they don't want that hitter to be able to eliminate one part of the plate. They want him to have to cover and respect both parts of the plate. And yesterday you could see when he's locating that, it just makes him able to not have to be as fine with the split finger, be as fine with the slider. Like, he can miss a little bit more because he's getting that hitter in swing mode a little bit more. And give Kirk credit. Kirk's setting up a little later. Like, you give he, you know, on his split finger, he'd give him a high target because they'd want the ball down. It was like he's setting up a little late to try and, you know, not give away as many things. Like, that guy standing on the on-deck circle could see the ball up because they know where they want the ball to start, certain counts and what he's trying to throw and what quadrant of the strike zone he's trying to throw it to. So Kirk made a, you could see he was trying to make it as hard as possible for that hitter and that guy on the on-deck circle to know what's coming. And this is 2022. This is the American League East. You got guys out there trying to do anything they can possibly do to give their team a chance to win. And that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what the doctor ordered. Like, you can say why Ross wanted to give him $100 million. For me, this is exactly why.
Well, as we said on Blue Jays Talk last night, it was the classic example of a guy playing a stopper. Playing the stopper's role, a guy that comes in and just stops the rot that we had seen as a result of Yusei Kikuchi's issues and Jose Berríos's issues. I mean, they needed that. It's the first of 8 games against the Red Sox and the Rays. That includes a doubleheader on Saturday. Worst case scenario yesterday is you're already taxed and even healthy, let's say it, suspicious bullpen. Worst case scenario is you're going into it in the 4th inning yesterday or the 5th inning mm-hmm. yesterday or even earlier. So it sets things up nicely with Ross Stripling starting and Alek Manoah. 10 strikeouts, his first double-digit strikeout game since May 1st. Not that pitching wins matter, but it was his first win this month, which I think says mm-hmm. more about the team.
It's a 9th quality start. That's a big deal. Quality starts are a big deal. That means you're going a little deeper in games. You're keeping the other team from scoring. So that's one of the stats. If you don't like looking at wins and losses from pitchers, I do. I think it matters. You walk up to a starting pitcher, it's their job, especially guys that make, you know, quite a bit of money who are brought into a team to be the final piece, which is sort of what Gossman's brought here to do. Like, he's the sort of that, you know, they need to do some things, obvious things in the bullpen. They need some left-handed bats. That's obvious. But when it comes to the rotation, he's sort of that 1-2 punch, and then you add Alek Manoah to the mix. But you going into that game yesterday, if you're Gossman, you're thinking about 3 guys in that order. The 3 guys, Devers, Bogaerts, and Martinez, they went 1-for-8 with 3 Ks yesterday. That's exactly what you have to do. Ross Stripling today, those 3 guys. You're going to have to figure out how to get them out.
And I thought the at-bat against Bogaerts in the 4th inning yesterday, he's already struck J.D. Martinez out, but his at-bat against Bogaerts in that inning, first pitch slider, then he throws him a change, not a splitty, he throws him a change, then a 4-seamer, then a slider. We talked about him, about sequencing and setting pitches up, and we saw him double up in the fastball a couple of times, him and Kirk. It looked, Kevin, as if it was, it almost looked as if it was a more professional approach than we've seen in a couple of
outings. It looked like he had confidence in all his pitches that they had no idea it was coming. I mean, sometimes, again, I'm not in the camp of I thought he was tipping pitches. Maybe he's doing a little something different on certain pitches and they'll correct those kind of things. But it just looked like, it's sort of like Ross. We had Ross on and I was asking him about tipping the pitches, and when he finally figured out how to not bring his hands above the bill of his cap on a breaking ball, keep his hands in the same spot, how much confidence that gave him to throw the kitchen sink. You just mentioned that at bat. Bogart's a really good hitter. Sometimes you got to go outside the box, but you can't go outside the box if you don't have confidence in throwing other pitches because of how good that guy is as a hitter. So that would tell you just those sequencing and being able to do it anytime would tell you that he's got a lot of confidence in throwing all those pitches.
The Red Sox both got both their runs off of Sean Anderson, who came in with a score 7-0. The Jays, by the way, they have not made official yet the signing of Sergio Romo, although John Heyman and other sources are reporting that Sergio Romo has signed. No idea, again, because it's not official, we have no idea when he will get here. But, Kevin, it was last year at this time that Ross Atkins started addressing the bullpen issues. We'll get back. I want to talk about the hitting, obviously, in yesterday's game, too. But do you think this is the start of a gradual overhaul of this bullpen?
Now, just put yourself in Ross Atkins' shoes if he's watching the game last night, which you know he was, and just see how good their team looks with good starting pitching. Just by how good their team looks. Like when Gosman's going out there having an idea of what he was doing, commanding the fastball, how he made a really good offensive team not look so good. And what that could look like if you just add some pieces. I'm not saying go out and give up the farm because nobody wants to do that.
You do.
No. Give up the farm is different than give up a piece or two to have to get what you want to make a serious run at this.
I know.
You only got a certain amount of time to make serious runs. And I think the Blue Jays, other than two teams in the American League, can compete with the other teams. And then when you get in the playoffs, you get a couple of hot guys, like the Braves. You get a couple of hot guys with some stuff. And you get a couple of hitters who are hot, you can make a serious run at that. So
here's the thing, though, Kev. Actually, I'm going to credit Ben Nicholson-Smith. We were talking before the game yesterday. Here's the thing about, we were discussing sort of how would you prioritize relievers or starters. And I think Ben had the right handle on this. Adding another starter or solidifying your rotation helps get you to the playoffs. I think when you're in the playoffs for this team, because it's hard to imagine they are going to do any better than Manoah, Berríos, or Gausman as their three. Once you get into the playoffs, doesn't it become more important to have that swing and miss stuff in the bullpen? In other words, if you're Ross and you're looking at this team, you've got to decide whether or not you think you're going to be life and death to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Or whether or not you decide to kind of roll the dice a bit and say, I'm going to view this team as a playoff team, and I'm going to go about adding pieces accordingly. Because if I get into a series, it's great to have four starting pitchers that you're really comfortable with, but I think it'd be better to have three starting pitchers you're really comfortable with, two guys in the bullpen that are lights out, and maybe Ross Stripling in the bullpen.
See, for me,
you're
thinking about this all wrong. For me, if you look at big picture and think, how can I get the best arm, whether that's a starter, whether that's a bullpen arm, you don't get greedy with what's on the market and what you think can take your team to the next level. At least this is me. Everybody's got their different opinions, and they're going to nitpick exactly what they think that could take their team to a whole different level. Perfect scenario would be you get a starter and two extra bullpen arms. That's perfect scenario. Realistically, do you think you could do that? Probably not. So you look at pitcher and you think of, they'll have the list of going down of your bat paths of how, what they throw would match up against teams, the American League East, to the schedule that's coming up with the Blue Jays. They're going to know all these things before they go into it. Me, I'm taking the best arm. If that's a starter and I don't have to give up the farm for it. Now, giving up the farm is a different conversation.
But you are, if you're going to get Luis Castillo, you're not going to get him because he's got some control.
One of your top three prospects and a big leaguer. So you'd have to give up Teoscar Hernandez and a Marino or a Revis Martinez. You'd have to give up something.
You're maybe Groshans. I don't think you're giving up Martinez or Marino.
Okay.
I think that'd be. I just don't think you are. I don't think you are. I don't think you can get. Moreno is. I just can't see putting him in a trade unless I'm getting somebody that I've got control of for 3 or 4 years. I can't see doing that.
Maybe not him.
Because I'm not entirely convinced that.
Well, you'd have to give up. So you're going the lesser route. You would go with some other arms that, you know, I'm adding Sergio Romo's of the world. Been there and done it before on the fringe of
career. You need to be.
But you're still going to have to give up a little something.
You're going
to. What is that something you want to give up? And that's the question that we don't have an answer to. We have no idea what they'd be willing to give up. We do know we've had Mark on this show and said no player is untouchable. We remember he said that.
Right.
When you're in it and you're in it to win it, which is exactly the how they sound that they're in it.
See, I don't.
We'll see.
Just because somebody says no player is untouchable doesn't mean that no player is untouchable. Okay. That's called talking up your trade value. I don't buy for a minute that there aren't people, that there aren't players in this roster the Jays won't move. I don't buy that for a second. Let's talk about the offense yesterday. Home runs from George Springer, Vladdy Jr., typical Vladdy Jr. home run, just a laser beam to center field. Mm. Matt Chapman, another good night at the plate from Alejandro Kirk, ho-hum.
It is amazing watching him hit.
Before we came on, we were watching a replay of the game last night.
It's amazing.
And we were talking about...
Just look at it. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No,
it's amazing. Like, it's amazing that he is so good with his lower half.
I'm Alejandro Kirk. I'm here to hit.
Yeah. And like you see, the way he acts, his facial expressions, they don't change. It's almost like I'm going to hammer you and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, I've never been... I can try to remember times that I've been in places like that, maybe at the minor league level, that a couple of times that I was in one of those grooves where you throw me something and I think I can get barreled to it. It's going to go very far and hard somewhere. He's just in one of those spots where out of the hand, I always talk about takes. Mm-hmm. You notice how he takes pitches. It's almost like that Barry Bonds thing. You remember Barry Bonds so hot for however many years in a row he was hot. As soon as it left the hand, he's taking the arm guard off.
Because he knows it's...
It's ball. It's Kirk sort of... in that little groove of all the lower half is matched up to the upper half. The eyes are not moving. He's seeing the ball so well. He's got the bat, the ball skills. His swing is so level. You know, he's got a great trigger. Talk about triggers. You need that. It's
Ben Wagner was telling a story last night on the broadcast that I found really, well, frankly, mind-blowing, to be quite honest. He had a talk with Dave Hudgens, who, of course, was with the is now the hitting strategist for the Blue Jays, and who was with the Houston Astros, and talking about Alejandro Kirk, and Dave Hudgens was talking about Kirk's command of the strike zone and knowledge of the strike zone, and he compared it favorably to Jose Altuve in terms of just that plate aware. Would you call it plate awareness? Just the understanding of the zone and what pitchers were trying to do to get him out and what he had to do to not get out, essentially. That's pretty high praise.
It is. Altuve, for me, is a little bit different of a hitter. He uses that short porch and left to his advantage. He has a lot more plate coverage. He doesn't always try and stay in the big part of the field. He gets pull happy. Like, he doesn't want to go line to line. He'll hit the ball to right field because he's late, not because he wants to. Kirk hits it over there because he wants to. Like, that's the difference for me. It's a little different kind of approach. Now, Dave has been around both hitters a little closer than I've been around him, but just looking at him from afar, looks to me like one hitter knows right now how to use his power. Kirk has no idea.
He has
no idea how to use his yet. He just knows that I'm so good at getting barrel to baseball that if I can do that, I'm going to get my hits because the ball jumps off my bat. Because I can use the whole field, the shift has been eliminated by me.
Do you think there will come a time where he will be turning on more pitches? Or would you rather see him just stay where you are and you're so good that it's not like you're not hitting home runs.
Not sure what
stay where you are and...
What would be the ceiling for Alejandro Kirk? Like, are you looking for 30 homers from him? Are you looking for 300 every year and 15 from him? Would you be, he might hit in the middle of the order now if he continues to do what he's doing. He's protecting a certain guy. He's going to come up with a lot of runners on base. Maybe you're looking at a 300 hitter with 15 bombs, with 30 doubles, maybe somewhere in that 70 RBI thing. again, run producing don't grow on trees. I know he's a really good hitter. At bats are totally different. He's been in a hot streak here. He's doing some things, but the league will figure out ways to pick and try and get him to chase. That will be the interesting thing. You asked me yesterday, can he continue to do this? I think mechanically, he's almost great at his mechanics. It's very simple. It's repeatable. And his swing is probably the most level swing other than Vladdy's. If you're not messing with him and trying to get him to do the low tee, just make you scratch your head till no end. Just wonder if he can continue to not chase a pitcher's pitch. That, for me, you notice Vladdy. Everybody talks about Vladdy. What's the difference between Vladdy last year and this year? For me, it's simple. It's not mechanics. You always see him standing up there. He's doing something different all the time. He'll do something with his bottom hand where he's trying to add direction, and he's saying, stay through it. I want to hit the ball to right center. That's basically telling his mind to stay through the baseball. I won't be short to it and long through it. He's telling himself that, which is, in turn, that he's pulling his front shoulder too much. And that's why sometimes you see him, he'll end up with his swing where his finish is up on his heels. That's sort of why he's just not staying through baseballs. But that, for me, is what he's swinging at. That's the difference between Vladdy last year and the Vladdy this year, is what he was not swinging at last year allowed him to get pitches to do maximum damage on. And we've noticed when he gets those, he hits the baseball harder than anybody. So I just think with Kirk, if he can lay off that close pitcher's pitch, no matter what the count is. Now, with two strikes, obviously, you got to protect a little bit more. But if he can lay off that in a hitter's count and get to a decent count, I don't see why he can't continue to be a 300 hitter. Let's stay there. Make it simple. Be a 300 hitter.
I mean, I'm with you. I think he might be one of those guys who can sort of turn himself into whatever hitter he wants to be.
But I will be the first one to raise my hand and say, we talked a lot about last year about the body type and the weight with Vladdy. Will that become an issue? He's young enough now that's not an issue. It's just not. The bat speed's there. But he'll get a little older. And because of his weight, because of the turn, because of the hip rotation, all the things that go into being a 300 hitter, get a little older, that thing gets a little slower. Listen, that needs to be a little bit more emphasized. So this might be an issue.
Well, that's why I think that at least this year, you almost have to treat him as if he's your DH backup catcher. Now, that's going to be hard, obviously, if he's going to be catching Kevin Gossman and Alec Manoa.
Might change when Danny Jansen gets back, though.
Yeah, but that's and the more I see of this, the more I'm convinced this team. I think they have to keep three catchers at least initially. They may not have a choice, at least initially. And then we'll see where it goes from there. But certainly, Alejandro Kirk right now is one of the real good stories in baseball, and he's almost freakishly good at the plate.
He is.
I'm at the point now with him where I'm surprised when he doesn't get on base. I'm just surprised he comes up, and I expect that something's going to happen.
Should we start giving Matt Chapman a little bit more love offensively?
Well, that was my next thing. We did a little bit on Blue Jays talk, but I want to talk about that home run last night. I want to talk about the work he's doing on maintaining a consistent bat path.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, tell me why, as someone who hasn't played the game, tell me why some hitters have a difficult time maintaining a consistent bat path. And for the folks out there who are, what does that mean? What does a consistent bat path mean?
He is a straight up and down hitter, which means his eyes are very far away from the strike zone, which sometimes will make you have an inconsistent bat path. Like, you have to be really good with your lower half to be able to hit a ball down because you start straight up and down. There's only one King Griffey Jr. Why do you think most hitters don't stand straight up and down like King Griffey did and just go from there? Because it's very hard to do because your eyes are so far away from the strike zone that it's impossible to use your lower half excellent enough to allow you to get the barrel to wherever the strike is in the strike zone. That's why people they crouch, mm-hmm. they widen out. Like, it puts your eyes close to the strike zone, which just allows your barrel to drop to the baseball instead of you having to use your lower half to get the barrel to the baseball. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, for me, he's very windmill sometimes. That's why And, the, you know, there's people watching us. So windmill means, let me see if I can do this without yelling at the microphone. Windmill is sort of your front elbow has looks like a windmill. Like it goes sort of in a rotation where your elbow is a little higher, like almost above your eyes.
Right.
So that's why you see sometimes the dugout when the camera pans over to him, he's actually telling, I think it's Dave Hudgens, he's telling him that he's using his top hand more. Like he's driving down. He wants to feel his top hand sort of punch at the target. That will keep him from having the windmill. And I've said this and I'll continue to say it. All he needs to be a better hitter is a trigger. Get something going back a little. Doesn't have to be major. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be a, you know, a giant move. He's trying to have a little bit more rhythm. You can tell in the last, you don't get hot just because. You get hot because you've made an adjustment that you have confidence in that now you can take off the field and apply between the lines. And you can tell they've really tried to have a little bit more rhythm to his flow of his hands. Like you can he's not so stale. Like he does early in the season, he'd go up there and he'd just dig in the batter's box and he'd stand there and he'd wait for the pitch. Like there was no movement of his hands. There was nothing. It would just stand there. And that's when you started to see the windmill. The elbow would go above the eyeballs, which would make his barrel do what? It would dip below the ball and you would see the little pop-ups that he would always hit. So now he's trying to correct that, but having a little bit more rhythm. For me, it's just add another trigger. I talk about Kirk, the little trigger he does by putting his front foot toe up in the air, which slots the barrel above his head. That's his trigger. It's like, I'm going to get it going back. So when I hit the baseball, I've maximum collision with it. That's what I want to do, having that little something going back. So it's just a little simple thing. But now he's starting to get some better pitches to hit, right? We talk about that all the time. Everybody always talks about that. The Blue Jays lineup talks about that. You talk to hear a pitching or hitting coach talk. He talks about the same thing. It's about what you swing at. So for me, taking it just a little bit to the next level would be add that trigger. But it just gets back to that. He's such a good defender, Jeff. And you think he should be that good of a hitter the way he plays defense, and sometimes it's just not fair. It's just not.
But no, listen, I'm more than happy with what I've seen from Matt Chapman. He brings to this team. I think he is exactly what the doctor ordered.
He might hit 25 homers. That's enough. 25, sure, you know, 240 maybe, 230. I mean, he's hitting like a .180 15, 20 games ago. So he's coming along good enough. I just think there's progression that he can go a little further and make him that much better of a hitter.
You probably know by now that Major League Baseball handed down a ton of suspensions as a result of that brawl between the Mariners and the Los Angeles Angels. And I just want to check and see if Phil Nevin's got a 10-game suspension. Mm-hmm. And just want to know how many games he's managed for the Angels to see whether or not he's actually got more games, more suspended games than games managed. We're going to talk to David Sampson of CBS Sports and former Marlins president about that. Daniel Kramer covers the Mariners for MLB.com. He'll be along to talk about that brawl, the discipline given out. And I don't think anybody, based on how that thing transpired, I don't think anybody has any issue with the discipline. If you're a manager and you essentially telegraph that you are going to throw at somebody, I don't think anybody has a problem with the length of that suspension.
You scheduled an opener for a reason.
For a reason. And, you know, it says something about the Angels organization. I'm a little surprised the fact that one of their interpreters, and I mean, they had a bunch of people thrown out who aren't
interpreters should get a
25-man roster.
Suspension.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in an instance like that, you know, you're gone.
You'd think so.
Anyhow, we'll talk to Sampson and Kramer about that. We've got Barker's Back Leg Bits. I've got a pair of tickets to give away for the July 2nd game against Tampa Bay. And when we come back, Caleb Joseph, Sportsnet Blue Jays analyst, former Major League catcher, will be along. We'll talk a little more Yusei Kikuchi, the gift that keeps on giving and giving and giving. And we'll get Caleb's take on what we saw from Kevin Gausman, what we need to see from Ross Stripling tonight with Stripling against Michael Wacha in game 2 of this 3-game series. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, come on, Barker, admit you're impressed that the trivia question that we have today, that I've had three raised trivia questions. I got the answer to it within 2 seconds.
They are
every one.
Well, they're not the hardest of questions.
Well, the other one, you wouldn't have got the other two. You would have had to think about it. I'm talking right away. Like, I didn't even go, could be. No, I got this one right out the gate. Pretty impressive. Mm. How much raised knowledge does one really need?
Three questions worth.
I'll give away tickets to see the Jays Rays on July 2nd later today. So I won't be giving them away on July 2nd. The tickets are for July 2nd. They'll be given away later today.
Oh, boy.
And we'll also give you the answer to yesterday's trivia question. And it's fun because people were still responding to the question during Blue Jays talk. And I was surprised. I was a little concerned initially because there were a ton of wrong answers. Some of them interesting wrong answers. You know, I could give you, we talked about the only Tampa Bay Ray to hit more than 40 home runs in a season. People were guessing Gary Sheffield. People were guessing Jose Canseco. Like, there were some good, those aren't the correct answers. I'll give you the answer later. Mm. But there were some good guesses. Which indicates to me that people really, 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 really like winning Blue Jays tickets.
Who wouldn't?
Do we have Caleb Joseph with us?
Yes.
Well, let's not waste any time then. Let's bring him on. Caleb Joseph, Sportsnet Blue Jays analyst, former major league catcher. Good morning, Mr. Joseph.
Hey, good morning, fellas. How are we doing?
We are doing splendidly. We are doing absolutely wonderful. What did you think of, not of Kevin Gausman's performance last night? We know what everybody thought about that. But just, Caleb, the way he mixed his pitches up, the way he and Alejandro Kirk were able to double up in a few pitches, use the slider effectively, even throw a changeup, not a splitty, but a changeup, and get a strikeout with that. What'd you make of the way Kevin Gausman went at the Red Sox?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, came on your show and talked a little bit about that sequencing, right? And goodness, you could have an hour-long conversation about that in itself. But I love the fact that he established something. And for him, it was the four-seam fastball yesterday. And there were, goodness, the entire first time through the order, he established that fastball in all different quadrants and made them uncomfortable with it up and inside, and especially inside. And when you play the big boy teams, the Red Sox, the Yankees, Dodgers, some of these big boy teams, you're going to have to do something on the inner half of the plate to get them sped up, to create some room for error. And he made those Red Sox hitters, especially the big boys in the middle lineup, very uncomfortable. I mean, goodness, J.D. Martinez's first swing of the game,
yes,
he had to go pick his thumbs up at home plate after he touched first base. You know, that tells me something. And up is not the new inside, and there's something to be said about going inside to hitters, especially on the big boy teams. He established that, which set up the entire game plan. It was as if he had just followed script. Get him sped up, establish the heater, then start throwing the split underneath, and then second time through the order, use the slider for first pitch strikes. I mean, goodness, used it 19 times yesterday. And for some reason, the Red Sox, they pull out that slider. Gausman just pulls it out against the Red Sox for some reason. I think it might be a pitch that can really keep him from throwing the split so much that it's not overexposed.
Can you explain to me, I'm not going to ask you to explain why one guy has so much success against one team. Gausman's ERA is 0.43 in three starts against the Red Sox. But as someone who's caught, talk to me about what that does to the mindset of the pitcher and the catcher and the opposing team when they know You know, you've seen this guy twice already, and you still can't hit him. And now you're in the third inning of the game against him, and you still can't hit him. And now he's throwing the, you know, a pitch he probably didn't throw a great deal to you in other games. What does that do to the mindset of the pitcher, catcher, and the opposing team?
It's real. I can remember a couple years ago facing the Yankees and our team in Baltimore. We could not hit Masahiro Tanaka. Something about him he was doing to the Orioles what Kevin Gausman is doing to the Red Sox. And when you showed up and you saw Tanaka was pitching, there was just this sense of, okay, we're going to have to find a way to pull one or two across and hope for the best in terms of shutting them out. And there is a sense of, it's not panic, but just, oh goodness, not again. And in division as well, it's one thing to face a guy that's, you know, in the AL West and you're playing in the AL East and you may just face him once, but a guy that you're probably going to see over and over. It's a little disheartening, but for Blue Jays fans and for Kevin Gausman, this is amazing. I mean, it's like the Red Sox sort of lock him back in, you know, for some reason. And this is a Red Sox team, right? That is, they're leading the majors in a lot of different categories: average, hits, doubles. This isn't some Pittsburgh Pirates offense. I mean, these guys are rolling. A lot of their success is because of their offense. And he just came in, and they just look so uncomfortable, right? So many uncomfortable swings, jam jobs, just out in front, big whiffs. That was a dominating performance. But when you're on the other side, yes, it is. They know it. And you never know what is going to happen in October, but that team knows that they got no chance against Gausman, and it's just going to get better and better every time he starts against them. Bodes well for some October baseball, in my opinion.
These teams are so worried about tipping pitches. I saw Kirky last night. He would set up high, like maybe up and in a little bit, and then last second he would slide over because they wanted the ball down and away. Obviously, they were wanting to throw a slider, but they wanted to give that impression that they were throwing either an elevated fastball or they were starting the split finger there. Two questions. Is that hard for a catcher to do, and is that a little bit, or is that a little bit too much? Is that overkill? Is that overthinking it?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it, because then you have to do it. For it to be effective, you have to stay there and actually throw the pitch there, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you fake a target every time, then that's predictable as well. You know what I mean? I'm a big fan of just give the pitch, set up down the middle. If you're going to set up late, and then as soon as he starts his motion, get into the position with the target so that he can see the target. I think this is a big deal, being able to see that target as a pitcher. I mean, goodness, what has everybody learned since they were 3 years old? All right, Johnny, throw to the mitt. Mm-hmm. Throw to the mitt, Johnny. You know, throw to the target. Throw to the mitt. So many guys are just they lock in on that, even if it's for a split second. I feel like that's a big deal. Is it harder as a catcher to set an up and in target to a right-handed batter and then kind of slide over and be ready for a down and away breaking pitch? Early on, when you're trying to figure out that one knee stance, yes, but Kirk's got it down to a science now, where once you practice it a few times, you can figure it out. It's not very difficult. But I'm a big fan of give the target. If you're going to set up late, give the sign, set up right down the middle, and then as soon as he makes a move, jump into your position with a target so that for at least a split second they can see it. But I thought, for the most part, I thought he did a really nice job in terms of giving early targets, especially with nobody on base. And I think that plays. I really do. I think it's an important part of the game.
Yeah. Should we be worried about Jose Berríos, what he's going through, or do you think it's an easy fix?
Easy fix. Again, he's getting these massive movements on the ball, right? And so that's good. But with that comes some, not pains, but just difficulties sometimes. And that's where sometimes as a catcher, you've got to help find ways to put him in a position to throw different pitches in game in different scenarios where maybe it's breaking 4 inches today and usually it breaks 3 inches. Well, I might have to set up a little bit more off the plate because he's throwing it on the black on the corner and it's moving back towards the middle of the plate. Well, I kind of want it to go right on the corner, so I've got to move over about another 2 inches. These are kind of in-game adjustments that you're trying to do as a catcher, right? And so he was throwing strikes. And we talked to Charlie Montoya yesterday in his press gaggle, and he was throwing strikes. And so that's a big deal. You know, when he goes to Kikuchi, he's not really throwing strikes. That's a whole nother animal. But Brios is throwing strikes. Can you move around? Can you navigate? How can you as a catcher help him get through that game? Because quite honestly, there's absolutely no reason Brios should ever go less than five, even when he has nothing, because he's still that good and he has that type of movement. How can a catcher help him move his body, move his target, call different pitches, get him back on track with a certain pitch? Sometimes you have to call the wrong pitch in the wrong location to the wrong batter to get a pitcher back on track. You have to go totally against the scouting report to get a pitcher back on track. And that's what I'm looking for, is what gets Brios back on track. It might be a backdoor slider. Who knows? I would know that if I was catching him. But can I set up 2 inches, 4 inches, 8 inches offside, off the corner to get him back on track, get his release point back out in front? Something, that's what I would be worried about. But no, easy fix for me. It's just a matter of consistency, because, right, he's shown it, and then it's a step forward, step, half step back, step forward, half step back. You just got to take two or three or four steps forward in a row.
Now, you mentioned Yusei Kikuchi, so you opened the door. I, of course, am going to walk right through that door, probably into a brick wall, because I know I've got a little sort of inside knowledge here of what you think of what the Jays may need to do or have to do with Yusei Kikuchi. I mean, I'm fully in the get him in the bullpen camp, but you made a point yesterday, and I think you and Kevin are on the same, maybe on the same page here. You've got that doubleheader coming up. It'd be great to sit here and say, just put him in the bullpen, bring somebody else up, and Bob's your uncle, and away we go. You got that doubleheader, right? So maybe do you play it start by start, Caleb, and let him go out there and make that next start?
I think so. I think you're kind of forced to, because of, like you said, the doubleheader, the schedule. It's going to be really hard to shuffle somebody. You're already going to need an additional starter for that doubleheader. Then you're talking about a couple roster moves. Something's going to happen within that four-game series. This is why there's days off in the big leagues, to try and hope to navigate around some of what we're about to experience here with the Blue Jays in terms of five games in 4 days. All it takes, one bad start, one start at three innings, one start at four innings, is going to create this domino effect of roster moves, because then you've got to be covered for the next game. And hopefully Jays can get some really nice starts in those games. But I believe it's a show or go. So this is your time to show it. And you're on a one start basis. If I was kind of playing it, that's how I would do it. I would be very honest. Hey, this is your start. You're a show or you're a go. If you cannot show that you're making progress, if you're not going to give us a chance to win, because this team, like you said last night in the post game, this team deserves a chance to win every single night, especially with the way that the offense has been doing way better. They've been staying consistent. This team deserves a chance to win. And if you're going to go out and give us three innings, we'll let you give us three innings out of the bullpen. But if there wasn't the doubleheader, I believe that might be happening right now. But because of the doubleheader, you're going to have not only one starter, but if you move into the bullpen, that's two additional starters you need. I don't know exactly where that's coming from. Maybe Thomas Hatch. So I think it's a one and done. Show or go.
Caleb, if you're Ross Stripling, you're sitting over there watching Kevin Gausman work his fastball both sides of the plate. Now Ross Stripling's a kitchen sink guy. He's going to throw everything he's got at you. You think he changed his game plan tonight and tries to throw more fastballs to both sides of the plate?
That's a great question. He's a smart guy, so I can tell you he will have a reason for what he does, and it's going to be a good one. And He's so good at being able to in-game adjust and throw against a hitter's weakness or throw to his strength, which is why he can stay in these positions in terms of not really show anything, quote, elite, right? But gets outs. The guy just gets outs, you know, and he's done it as a starter. He's done it as a reliever. He's closed the game But going back to your question, yeah, I think he probably sees what Gausman does and has that in the back of his mind. He probably has his own game plan. And if something starts to get sideways, he knows how to correct it. Maybe correcting it is throwing some more heaters inside. But he's kind of an older guy. He he's on those Dodgers teams, and he knows how he's talking to a lot of those hitters. He knows how the big boys kind of like it and how they don't like it and what makes them uncomfortable. And he knows how to play that big boy baseball. So, yes, I do think he's going to come out and throw a few more. Is he going to challenge him like Gausman did to that extreme? I'm not 100% sure, but I do think he's going to challenge them inside. And I love the fact that he has that kind of runner two seam that just runs right on the hands. That's the pitch I'd just be wearing out. I don't know if I would try and like establish it like Gausman did, but I'm going to use that and try and set the tone with that and then work that change up underneath off of it as well.
Caleb, really good of you to join us today. Terrific insight, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you down at the park.
You got it. All right. See you later.
Caleb Joseph, Sportsnet Blue Jays analyst, former major league catcher, including a stop with the Jays.
It'd be interesting to see what they do with Yusei Kikuchi. I don't think there's an easy answer. I think that may be what they're going through. I'm sure they have an answer.
Charlie did say yesterday, and I asked him, is Yusei Kikuchi going to make his next start? And his answer was, as far as I know, yes. He was asked in a follow-up about whether a conversation has been had regarding a move to the bullpen. He said, we haven't gone there. Now, I don't know if that's a conversation amongst the coaching staff. I've got to think somebody on the charter said, you know, or maybe that's, they haven't had that discussion with Kikuchi and with the powers that, you know, with the powers that be. And, and it's entirely possible Kikuchi's agent may have a say in this as well.
You think so?
Yeah, you never know. That guy does kind of.
But Boris may have a say-so in how many starts you say Kikuchi gets.
He would. I would be willing to bet that he would have an opinion on it.
Don't come to me about any more of my clients if you're putting my.
We're laughing at it. But you know what? The thing about Scott Boris, man, we talk about this all the time. If I was a real good player, he'd be my guy because he's there for you, and he doesn't care who he pisses off.
I would think the conversation would be like you would have a say so in that until I wrote you a check, and then your say so's out. You have no say so.
Wait a minute, you're still getting your percentage whether or not he's in the bullpen
Don't you worry
you're still
about
getting his
don't
percentage.
Don't you worry about where he's pitching.
Anyhow,
that would be my answer. But it'd be
interesting. But you also know there's a relationship between front offices and agents.
But you're not calling to ask permission.
No, but what I'm saying is
are you okay with this?
No, but what I'm saying is you may want to explain it. Yeah.
You've been watching the same game I'm watching?
You may want to explain
it. I could go 2 1/3. Hey, I mean, you got it's some things you have to add a little humor to, and this may be one of those things because you know he's trying hard. Like he's a trier. He's not do all the pins, and he's trying hard to figure these things out. So that's why I question moving him to the pen. Would that help him? Would that help your team?
I think it would help your team.
It might be more if you got a guy you could skip a start. Give him an opportunity to figure things out that way, depending on who his next start would be against. That would be, I mean, 5 games in 4 days is not the easiest way to skip a guy's start, so you probably won't do it this time around. But if you have to, maybe you skip a start, you give him 8 or 9 days between starts. That might help him a little bit more than putting him in a pen and never pitching him again.
God help him if this team is on like a 3-game winning streak when his start rolls around or they – I don't know, Kevin. You've got to win these games. You got to win as many of these games as possible, and I'm not comfortable sending him out.
I got a lot of confidence in Max Castillo and Trent Thornton and Matt Gage.
I'll tell you what, more than I have in Yusei Kikuchi right now. Yeah, more than I have in Yusei Kikuchi. It may be misplaced confidence, but yes. Who do I think has got a better chance of giving me, 4 innings, 5 innings? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I have more confidence in Max Castillo.
They're being real quiet about this. So there's something going on that we don't know about. They'll try and figure it out. They'll try and work it out.
Thomas Hatch is a possibility as well.
Throw Castillo. At least you've seen it not too long ago that it could actually work.
Yeah, but
Thomas Hatch, what would tell you that's going to work?
There's a reason that these guys are in the organization. I mean, there just is. But we'll know, you introduced something last night. What if the Jays are in a bit of a role, does it become a bit easier to just let him go? I don't know.
How the next couple of days go, Stripling goes six.
It's hard to manage.
Manoah goes seven.
It's hard to manage that way, though, isn't it? Like, wouldn't you want to let... You say Kikuchi's not an idiot. You'd want to let him know at some point whether
sure
or not he's going to make the start, right? You'd want to let him know whether or not he's going to make the start.
Throwing him in the bullpen and forgetting about it. How hard's that?
Yeah. I have a pair of tickets to give away to a July 2nd game between the Jays and the Tampa Bay Rays. We have David Sampson joining us, Daniel Kramer as well. We're going to take a look at that big, big list of suspensions Major League Baseball handed down yesterday. And we'll also talk a little bit with Daniel Kramer about Sergio Romo, who, according to a variety of reports, is joining the Blue Jays. That has not been made official yet. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.